This is the News and Talk of Nevada. Now, Bosma on Business with award-winning entrepreneur Mike Bosma. We're getting Northern Nevada back to business on News Talk 780 KOH. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime.
Good morning, Reno. My name is Mike Bosma, your business savvy CPA. Happy Thanksgiving to you. This is one of those seasons where hopefully you can all huddle around the fireplace, the TV, or the bar, whatever you find, you call home, and just count your blessings. And one of the things I do every Thanksgiving is just am so thankful for all the amazing advisors and business owners that I get to practice with each and every day. So again, it's Bosman Business. Each and every Saturday, we come to you and explain how to make business greatness. Today is no different. So one of the things that you do want to be aware of and listen for in the show, some of the things you need to be aware of for the end of the year as you do planning, all things taxes, cash flow, budgeting, etc. So without further ado, one of the things we do on Saturday mornings is bring to you entrepreneurs that are trying to make a buck in different ways. Some of them are socially motivated. Some of them are motivated by the great dollar. Finding more and more people are mixed bag, you know. So let's see what today brings us. So in studio, Shaji Matthew. You're going to have to bear with me, but Shaji.
Shaji, you got that right.
All right. One of the things we do, we start a little bit about your business. So talk to me what Sierra Nevada Imports is.
First of all, thank you, Mike, for having me, and happy Thanksgiving to all our guests who are listening to this. So I'm Shaji Matthew, and I am Sierra Nevada Imports. We are a wine import company.
And wine now, okay. I'm liking the tone and tenor of this.
Thank you, right. Thank you. We are a wine import company, and we import wines from France, Spain, Greece, and Italy. And our focus is very much on family-owned small producers. I hate to use the word cliche, the cliched word artisan, but yeah, they're all
artisan wines,
right? From beautiful parts of Europe.
Very, very cool. And how did you decide to get in this business?
Well, how long is the show, Mike?
1 hour.
All right.
But you got 30 seconds or less.
Yeah. I got interested in the wine back in my college days at UNR, actually.
Okay.
And
UNR, not known as the wine enthusiast school, more beer, but
it is a beer enthusiast school. You're okay. Right. So,
but you like the vino.
I like the vino. I was the salmon swimming against the current, and decided to get into the science of wine, and which over time took me to get a certification from UC Davis in viticulture enology. And
You're going to have to say that one more time.
I got a certification from UC Davis in viticulture and enology.
Viticulture, okay.
And enology, so winemaking and wine growing.
Cool, okay.
And that further led me into learning more about the various wine growing regions of the world, including France, Spain, et cetera.
So, Shaji, it was really about being able to write off the wine you were consuming, right?
No, say that again, Mike.
You want to be able to deduct the tax or deduct for income taxes. So you're like, hey, I'm going to get into this wine gig. No, I'm just kidding.
It's also a good benefit. Right? Please don't give away what I'm trying to do here.
The family secrets.
Thank
okay,
you.
Cool.
Please, thank you.
And how long have you been in business?
Sierra Nevada Imports has been in business for 3 years.
3 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, it will be 3 years in 2017.
Okay. So. And how do you identify wines that you're going to go import?
Excellent point. It's not a random process. It is never, hey, I'm going to buy a wine for a euro and sell it for 4 euros here.
Right.
So the process definitely involves seeking out producers that fit my style profile of what I tend to like.
Right.
My philosophy is I have to like the person I'm working with.
Right.
The wine producer, for example. Then second is I have to like the product, obviously. And the third is the process. It should not be a very difficult task to obtain the wine from, let's say, Crete in Greece and bring it to
that's a good point, Shaji. Yeah, so you think about, hey, I'm going to import wine. I had a gentleman on the show a month or so ago, and he kind of created this great business model about writing reviews on certain types of technology, and as a result, people started sending him all this cool new technology as he got some notoriety in that. And he's like, yeah, I get the coolest gadgets and they're free. Now, do you get the wine for free?
I do get samples sent to me, absolutely.
Okay, but they don't send you the whole bottle. They just send you like a little vino bottle, or do they give you the whole shoot?
They send me the whole bottle.
Okay, well played.
And I also get almost 5 emails a day from someone somewhere.
Really?
wanting me to represent them. But like I said, it's a process and it's not random.
Okay. How many current labels do you represent?
Between France, Spain, Greece, and Italy, we probably represent almost 20-25 labels.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So 3 years, it'll be a good little uptick.
It is a good uptick.
Okay, now we all know in business, it's not what you buy, it's what you sell. So how do you sell the wine?
That, you're absolutely right. It's a challenge. So, the way we sell our wines currently is we also have a distributorship in the state of California. So we do distribute to stores and wineries and wine stores and retailers in California.
California, okay.
As well as we do have a distributor in the state of Nevada. And so our wines eventually make its way to various places in Reno and a little bit in Las Vegas. We also sell direct to consumers. So,
absolutely.
So if you, for example, Mike, want to buy a bottle of wine from me, we can ship it to you from California without a problem.
Okay, but can you ship it from Nevada?
No, we cannot ship it from Nevada because the wines are all stored in the state of California, and
right.
That's where they ship from.
Yeah, and so that's where, just for the benefit of our listeners, a little background on that. So back in Prohibition days, they came up with what's known as the three-tier system. So they wanted to be able to tax this stuff along the way, and what they found is that if you're brewing it and selling it, the government wasn't getting their tax post-prohibition. So they said, hey, if we're going to let this sin re-establish itself, we're going to make sure we get the tax. And one of the things that you're probably thinking of as our listeners is sales tax. But there's also literally stamp taxes that go behind that are paid as it moves along the way from manufacturer to distributor. Then that tax is already paid by the time you buy it in the store. Now, the states have recalibrated some of these rules. And so in studio, Shaji Matthew from Sierra Nevada Imports talked to us about the business of wine importation and distribution. And you just got to know the rules because, those are parked in California. You're a distributor in California.
Correct.
Right? And it sounds like California has relaxed the rules a little bit.
That is absolutely correct.
So, and then that created a business model for you.
Absolutely.
Right. So, how long ago did California relax rules and how did you learn about it? How did you take advantage of it?
So, we planned the birth of Sierra Nevada Imports way back in 2012. It was around that time when the state of California were allowing a license called 9-17-20, which allows you to import wines into California, distributor in California, and do direct-to-consumer sales. So those are three different licenses that one has to hold.
Right.
And it's an interesting point you brought up, Mike, is the three-tier system, which is all the appendage of the prohibition and when people used to make stuff in their bathtubs. I'm sure not good wine, but nevertheless.
Right, but when you can't go down to Raley's and buy wine, any wine, it's good wine.
Exactly, I know. The problem with the three-tier system is, it's a great way for 20 people along the way to generate tax and jack up the price of the wine. But the problem is, a wine that would cost €3 in France, by the time it makes its way to Reno, Nevada, it's $25.
Right. No, that's exactly right. And so the more people with their hands on it, the more prohibitive it is to be able to, especially, as you said, artisan wine. So think of it this way, from an economies of scale perspective. If I'm, pick a big wine label, nothing's coming to mind right now. But
you want a foreign label? Or
yeah, a big foreign label.
Let's say Chateau Margaux.
Okay. Chateau Margaux, okay. They barrel this stuff, by the tanker load almost. And so sending a bottle to somebody when you've got millions isn't a big deal. But if you're an artisan winery and you're sending a bottle to somebody, hopefully that they're going to import and distribute you, the higher the retail on that, the less opportunity is to sell it. And so a lot of times, particularly bit of a fan of the craft beer industry. And as I followed that, people were like, well, yeah, people want something a little local. They want something with stories behind them. And that's almost as important as the wine, particularly now that I would call it the science of winemaking is more refined. So had an opportunity to talk to a couple different vintners who can say, yeah, you know, depending on the harvest, you can kind of make whatever wine you want. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, you could, manipulate wine into what the consumer likes.
Yep.
You know, however, you know, a good wine is the least manipulated, what I call minimal intervention. All good winemaking should happen in the vineyard.
Right.
And,
not in the barrel, not in the mixology, right?
Absolutely. That's what I believe in. And interestingly, that's what I look for in my producers.
Right.
As well,
so more of a single grape, single vineyard.
You know, not necessarily a single grape or a single vineyard either.
Okay.
Because in Europe, for instance, Mike, they tend to blend quite a bit.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like a lot of times with a blend, you can manipulate. I say manipulate like it's bad. It just makes good wine. But you can get a flavor profile by depending on the amount of tannins, amount of sugar in a grape.
Very true.
Right.
To be able
to get a flavor profile that you're looking
very
for.
Very true. But in the old world, you know, in France and Italy, for example, right. There are laws that only allow you certain grapes to be blended in.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. For example.
So they're all about not racial diversity in the grape world. They're all about segregation.
It is about segregation.
That's funny. I don't care who you are.
It's extreme. It's a highly regulated
right.
Segregation. You're right. You know, for example, in Bordeaux, you have your Cabernet Merlot and mm-hmm. Cab Franc, Petit Verdot, Malbec, as you go a little south. But if you go to southern Rhone, you cannot put Merlot in your blend. You know,
right.
You're using Grenache and Syrah,
right,
and
right.
other interesting grapes,
which are great or grape on in their own right. But yeah, so but no, no good to blend those from outside the region. So,
well, that and the hundreds of years of winemaking have taught these people over time, empirically, that these particular grapes work well in that region.
Gotcha. Right. So, okay. So, how much capital, Shaji, did you need to get this thing started?
You know, good point, because, my philosophy has always been, cut to your cloth according to the quote you need. And so it was never about buying all the wines I can get my hands on. So,
I just want to make sure we don't gloss over that. I think it's a great quote, Shaji. Cut your cloth to the coat you need.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, don't get over your skis. Just buy what you need.
What you need. And
I like it.
You know, but that having said, I'm a little headstrong in what I tend to buy. I don't look at the market to see what people like. For example, Reno, Nevada is a great example where, with the proximity to Napa Valley and California, particularly, mm-hmm. We don't. Tend to see a lot of people buying most anything other than cheap Cabernet and bad Chardonnay. and they have great names and yellow labels, but it's at the same time it is
it's a mediocre, wine.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And education is a huge deal,
right.
and I'm willing to gamble on
right.
Beaujolais and Assyrtiko.
Let's do this when we come back. Let's talk about how to make a buck on good wine. It's Bosmon Business, News Talk 780 KOH. Welcome back to Bosmon Business. It is the wine show in studio. Shaji Matthew, proprietor from Sierra Nevada Imports. They import and distribute wine from all parts across the globe. Fascinating business model. Shaji, I appreciate you sharing it with us. One of the things you want to kind of touch on is, we talked about how much capital it takes to kind of get this thing going. So you store your wine in California.
Correct. I store the wine in American Canyon.
Right. Okay.
Why reinvent the wheel? Everybody is storing wine in American Canyon, so we did
too. So you do too. And so now, are you storing that and distributing that out of like a 3PL third-party logistics operation? Or are you doing the distribution yourself?
No, you're using a third-party logistics operation.
Yeah. Because that way you don't have to hire a bunch of people. You're like, hey, you're on pallets there. They pick it and ship it.
Exactly.
Got it. So But now it's interesting, Shaji, you know, California relaxed their regulations and you were able to get into business, but you're doing business in California, but you're not storing that here in Reno. Is that because they don't have the same favorable regulations?
That is absolutely right. In fact, Sierra Nevada Imports is the only true wine import company in the whole state of Nevada.
Wow.
And when there are other companies that call themselves import, but they're actually distributors.
Right.
And when I applied to the city of Reno, for instance, for importer's license, because I live here and this is where I've lived for the last 20-something years, and importer's license, they didn't have a category for a wine importer's license, and they had to actually, you know, give me a distributor's license,
which
you cannot use.
Right.
Which is kind of ironical.
So now who's your distributor here?
My distributor is Sapphire Family of Wines.
Okay, gotcha. So that's because you've now got an extra layer of people in there. You can't buy that same wine. Probably. I'm just, you know, with knowing the markup and the business, very familiar with it. You can buy your wine cheaper in California than Nevada. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it'd be fair to say that.
Right. So it's just more people, more hands in the mix, more expensive the mix.
That's right.
And that's just how it is. So, I would encourage our legislators to, you know, let the Shajis of the world be able to make a buck here in Reno.
Thank you, Mike.
But it creates jobs too, right? Like you said, there's a whole logistics and distribution warehouse network in California built around this legislation that happened.
You know, that's correct. And California is not the only state that allows that. In fact, Oregon allows it, Washington State allows it, and sort of several states on the East Coast. Virginia allows it.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, we voted blue, right? I mean, California's blue, Washington blue. I mean, like, We should be able to have the same wine.
Yeah, no, but wine is red and white, so.
Oh, right, I got you. Okay, it seemed like that was a common thread running up the coast. but no, it's just, you know, people like their wine.
I know what you mean. Absolutely. I agree with you.
Okay. And what are the challenges moving forward for your business?
The challenge moving forward of the business is actually growth, you know, because the education of the consumer is the biggest issue.
Right.
Most people don't know what a Saint Chinian is, and most people don't know what an Assyrtiko from Greece is. So most people don't know that Primitivo from Italy is actually a clonal resemblance to Zinfandel.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right.
And it takes that kind of educating the public to be able to place these wines on people's tables. And Thanksgiving is coming, folks, so, you know, Beaujolais.
Beaujolais is a play for Thanksgiving Day.
I mean, that is, you know.
You phrase the pace. You heard it here.
Exactly.
Okay, don't hold it against me. All right, so you think about Beaujolais, but I would also imagine your cost of customer acquisition. So obviously you're a distributor, so you need to sell to people. So you need stores. So now are you selling to restaurants? Are you selling to retail outlets?
In the city of Reno, both restaurants and retail outlets, and in the same thing, the state of California. The spread of the capital is concerned. Obviously, it is acquisition of the wines from Europe. And the exchange rate of the dollar to euro plays a huge part in that.
Right.
Then transporting the wine from the cellar in perfect climatic conditions to the port, whichever that is, and make sure everything comes at the same time and the wine doesn't hang out in some hot port for a day or so.
Yeah, actually, it's a good point. So, I mean, obviously, you're not buying this stuff by the container load, but if it gets here and in that perfect climatic condition spoils the wine, who bears the risk of loss?
The wines are insured. However, every single one of my wine, whether it's shipped during summer or winter, is actually shipped in a thermal insulator container.
Oh, really? Okay.
Absolutely. I want someone here to taste the wine exactly how it left the cellar door.
Okay. How do you ensure quality control on that? I guess that's you got to sip it.
Yeah, you know, it's a hard job.
It's a hard job. Somebody's got to do it. Okay. But it sounds like you've got really the training to be able to really discern what that is. You know, it's like, what do tasting notes and then, you know, cork a bottle when it gets here and make sure it's consistent? Or
absolutely. And I taste, you know, every wine we sell, like I said earlier, there is these are wines that I picked and I curated. Mm-hmm. I keep notes on every wine I have drunk since 1991.
Right. Right. So, and what's the average price point kind of at retail for your wine?
The average price point for retail for most of my wines are in the mid-20s.
Okay. So a very, very doable bottle of nice wine.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So is it first bottle, second bottle, or third bottle wine? But I'll explain that to you. So you always know, like, the first bottle of wine, you want it to be the really, really nice bottle of wine.
Uh-huh.
By the time you get to the second bottle, it doesn't matter so much. Third bottle, it can be come out of the bathtub. You're not going to know the difference.
Right. So second bottle.
Okay, perfect. No, well, it helps people kind of calibrate to that, right?
Absolutely.
Even
though we do have first bottle wines that we, they're priced a little higher.
Right.
Low 30s, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, no, very, very cool. And so I was going to say, so how's business going? What are sales running right now?
So right now we're heading into the holiday season, and
this is the time to make or break it, right?
Time where people are thinking about wine, and mm-hmm. We have Thanksgiving, so like I said, Beaujolais, and mm-hmm. next thing you know, we are heading into Christmas, and it's all the winter, fireplaces. So think about your big Syrahs and Southern French reds, and also some of the Greek reds, interestingly. And then
really, you mentioned that a couple times, Shaji, that you sound like you're a fan of Greek wine. I didn't know that it was a big wine region. Explain that to me.
Greece actually has been a big wine region for almost several thousand years. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they had the Ottoman Empire, which doesn't allow consumption of wine, and then World War II, which kind of comes in the way of working.
Okay.
So the Greek industry, even though it's young today, which can be an advantage, but has a history stretching back to several thousand years.
Okay.
And Greece also has almost 300 indigenous grapes of its own, which are not found anywhere else in the world. And add to that mix young winemakers who are not afraid to push the envelope a little bit and are really proud of what they're making. I think it bodes well for the Greek wine industry.
Nope, I got you. And that's where a neat business model. And like you said, it's a hard life. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to taste the wine.
I agree.
So you live here, but I guess how does that work? Your all your wines in California. So a lot of back and forth. You just have them pull a bottle, ship it over. What do you do?
As
this wine is coming in, typically it's going to be received at a third party logistics company.
Uh-huh.
Do you meet that wine when it shows up? How are you doing that quality control? Because logistically, it's a bit of a hike to get over there.
It is a hike to get over there. So we do, every time the shipment comes over, we do go over there to take a look at the wines and make sure everything came properly. It's a bit of a work. And it would have been great if we could have done that in Nevada.
Right. Well, let's do this. Let's talk about kind of working the ins and outs of working with a third-party logistics company and kind of how to be able to monetize that in your business. It's Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KOH. Welcome back, Bosma on Business. Your host, Mike Bosma, in studio, Shaji Matthew, proprietor from Sierra Nevada Imports. As we look at it, you're probably out even now shopping because that's what people do after Thanksgiving to go work off all the turkey calories. One of the things you just want to be aware of as you're out and about is just because you're out shopping doesn't mean you're relieved of all these filing responsibilities that you have that our great government has placed upon you. Getting more and more notices from people that are doing business in California but not registered to do business there. And California, great state in that they're smart. Perhaps smarter than most in terms of being able to say, well, hey, if you're a California company and you're paying people to do stuff, you have to withhold if they can't give you a certificate saying they're paying tax there. So that's called a Form 590. And a lot of people are getting caught in that nexus dragnet and now it's kind of subjected to California's taxes. And so I just encourage you to be ahead of that. One of the things that we do is help with strategies, particularly if you're a closely held family-run business, trying to stay out of the income tax part of that California equation. Strategies to do that only are available to small businesses, it's called a diversification strategy. Just have a sales subsidiary and product subsidiary and keep your nexus creation activities away from the income and revenue producing activities. Nexus, of course, taxable presence, what footprint it takes for a state to impose their will and tax you. One of the things we're talking about is how third-party logistics providers work in studio, as I mentioned, Shaji Matthew from Sierra Nevada Imports. Shaji, you decided, hey, instead of rent a warehouse, hire a bunch of people, drive forklifts around, put racking in, to outsource it to a third-party logistics provider. The acronym for that is 3PL. What kind of due diligence did you do deciding, number one, to do that, to outsource? You know, so in basically, in a nutshell, that's where it's a warehouse, just like your warehouse, but they, instead of warehouse only having your stuff, they put other people's stuff in there. And then they have usually fairly sophisticated methodology, both to be able to track your products as they come in and go out, and then to count inventory so you know how much products you have, and then you know, some kind of economic relationship when somebody runs a forklift into your stuff on their place. You're probably more protected there than you are having in your own warehouse. Especially if you have all those nice bottles of Bordeaux floating around. So, Shaji, what was the process you went through to decide, hey, I'm going to outsource the distribution part of this equation?
Well, obviously, I wanted to keep things very simple, but at the same time, not compromise on quality at all. In terms of keeping things simple, the big component was accessibility. So, which means, remember, all the wines come into the Port of Oakland.
Right.
And I didn't want a warehouse that was 4 hours away. That was one thing. Second, as I mentioned earlier, I did not want to reinvent the wheel. So I didn't want to, you know, figure out what temperature control, what humidity control, what the light condition is. So you have Napa Valley where American Cannon is nearby with all the warehouses. Mm-hmm. They already have temperature control and light control and, you know, all the parameters needed to keep the wines in, you know, in pristine
condition. Right, yeah, you've already got a whole wine industry there, right?
Yeah, exactly. Why, you know, go around rebuilding things that someone else has already done? That's, obviously, you're paying a price for it. Third thing was for me to keep track of what's in my inventory. So, you know, I needed a company that was easy for me to get hold of either on the phone or email or even just log in and see what my current inventory as of this particular moment is. So those are the, you know, most important things I'm looking for. And you do pay, a price for this kind of a convenience and being able to keep these wines in such good condition.
Well, I was going to say, because it's got to be climate controlled, obviously, right?
It is climate control and humidity control and the light conditions, you know, as well. But paying for that is much better than losing a whole bunch of wine you know, went through all the trouble to get across the oceans here. So,
yeah. So I got you. And then how did you decide this particular distributor?
This particular warehouse, I decided on by seeing who else they store.
So, oh, right. Okay.
You know, so, like I said, you know, I called around and figured out which other companies were storing their wines there, and some of the you know, extremely well-known companies in the Napa Valley actually stores their wine there. I figured if they're trusting
if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
And of course, I did tour the facility before I signed on with
them. Well, yeah, I got you. But did you ask them for the same pricing that the big wine label got, or did you worry, you know, how did you negotiate pricing? That's always a sticky wicket.
It's not a sticky wicket because the pricing is determined by how many cases you have.
Right.
So my producers, you know, some of them don't even make 5,000 bottles compared to, you know, a producer in Napa Valley for making 150,000 cases a year.
Right.
So the price is per case. So interestingly, you know, my inventory is a small little nook in the in the warehouse.
Right.
You know, amidst the walls and walls of cases. So you know, I'm paying per case and not.
Okay. So you kind of negotiated that, but you know, they showed you the price list because you know, my 3PL clients here are saying they're getting jammed. You know, it's very competitive, and invariably it's the devil's in the details. So you can have a cost per case, but you know, depending on how, you know, if it needs to be moved or you know what the concentration is of the cases, you know, they're selling space both horizontally and vertically. So, you know, yeah, depending on, yeah, how that is kind of dialed in is going to matter too. And that's where a lot of times the surprises come as, you know, you get that first bill, right? And you're like, wait. Well, no, I'm sorry. I had to actually have a human being touch your stuff. So you're going to pay for that.
That's right. Human beings touching anything is really expensive.
Right. That's why robots are the play.
I agree.
Right. It seems like it's going that way. So, especially if, I don't know if you've, your shop there, in Napa is automated or not, but if you've ever seen a warehouse, I've seen a handful of them operated by robots. It's a little, T3 Judgment Day-ish. But yeah, they don't, I've had large manufacturers, I probably have the most robust manufacturing distribution practice in Northern Nevada for clients. And so, I've been able to be in these billion-dollar facilities. And there's like, they look at how much it saves them to have robots, and the return on investments usually are from 12 to 18 months on these million-dollar robots because they're like, they don't run into stuff. especially now with the technology is just amazing. And that's where one of the other things that I've seen a big inventory benefit on in 3PL land is radio frequency technology. Are you using that? And
we're not interestingly, I heard on the radio this morning about how Delta is using radio frequency to track their luggage. But it's not, a common occurrence for someone to lose a case in a warehouse, at least not that I know of, and never happened to me in the last 3 years. So.
Okay. So, well, and that's where a lot of times it's pretty, I guess, when you're doing inventory, you're always reconciling what the count is versus what the system has. And so many 3PL providers, they provide inventory management. And so you probably in your situation go online and you can look at what the system says. But then every month, usually, depending on how sensitive the inventory is, could be every week, and in some places it's every day, they're going to compare what you have in the system to what's actually on the floor.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
And what we found from my clients that have implemented the RF technology is you can do that count without leaving the office. Because you get the RF readers, and each tag and the price on these things have come down to nothing now. Where basically not only what you have, but also where it's where it is pretty quick without having to do a manual count. Because as you mentioned, anytime you have a human intervention, it's expensive, and unfortunately, oftentimes it's wrong. Right.
True. The human error can always be there.
Right. So, you guys had any big discrepancies in the inventory count in the last 3 years?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the wine's always where the wine's supposed to be.
Absolutely.
I can't even believe, until all of a sudden you get to the middle of that pallet. I'm an accountant, right? So, the auditor in my head is like, you get to the middle of the pallet and all the boxes in the middle are empty. You're like, wait. What happened?
Happened so far.
No, cool. So, no, congratulations. Sounds like it's a great business model. It's working for you. Where do you see the business growing? You've got to pay for all this stuff, right? And nobody's going to ship you a pallet of wine if it's not paid for.
Unfortunately, that is how it works. Yeah.
Right. And so if that's true, there's a lot of capital in that warehouse. I mean, like how much just is a dollar amount is parked in the warehouse right now?
Approximately $100,000.
About $100,000 of wine. Right. So, and I thought my wine cellar was bad. and I would imagine your number one limiter to growth is capital, and then people buying the wine, right? Mm-hmm. So how do you get people? How do you get more people buying the wine?
Well, first of all, shows like this where people realize that I exist and the wines exist, and that's one. Second is education. Thanks to Abbey Agency, we are actually trying to reach out to more folks and let them know that there are wines that offer value and are more exciting and can make great pairings with food.
Right. Well, that's where you need a talented agency, whether or not you've outsourced that or have it in house. But to be able to message that, right, to be able to kind of capture the imagination of somebody that they're kind of bringing in Tuscany to the living room, Christmas. Right?
You're absolutely right. If I have a wine from Nausa, Greece, sitting in my wine warehouse in California, and I don't talk about it, nobody knows it's there.
Right.
It's
right.
Like a tree falling in a forest.
Right.
So, so it is a challenge. I don't mean as a challenge, as a hard work, but I mean that as an effort that one has to make to get out there and tell people, hey, you like Barolo? And guess what? You can try a Zeno Mauro from Greece, and that will be
spot on and save you about $80 a bottle. So.
Yeah, and you can brag to your friends about words like Zeno Mauro.
Right? Yeah, it just sounds cool. So, what'd you do before you got in the wine business? Shaji?
Well, I'm a pediatrician.
Okay.
That's my day job, and that's where I need to be in 20 minutes.
Okay.
And I still have my day job as a pediatrician, and I did my PhD at UNR.
Okay. Oh, excellent.
Way back when, and did a postdoctoral fellowship, and shortly after that, did my residency in pediatrics. So I do practice medicine to a group of patients who cannot drink
wine.
So,
and that allows you to support the wine business. So so let's do this. We come back. It's the number one thing when starting your import-export business. It's Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KUH. Welcome back to Bosma on Business. Your host, Mike Bosma. Hey, if you are thinking that maybe you're not getting the proactive planning you need to effectively manage your tax liability, effectively manage your cash flow, maybe you went to the bank with those internal financial statements and they didn't give you the line of credit that you wanted, or maybe the cost of it was exorbitant, you probably need our help. Give us a call, 775-786-4900. Get the advisor around the table for one of those free one-hour consultations. We can, in that one-hour meeting, make it very productive and talk to you about kind of how the game is played save a buck or two in taxes, which is really not even saving. It's just managing your tax liability is probably the number one or maybe number two expense you're going to have to run your business, maybe after labor. So make sure you're managing that proactively. Otherwise, you will have surprises. No surprises here. Shaji Matthew, proprietor of Southern Nevada Imports. Shaji, I appreciate you coming in and sharing your journey. Yeah, particularly the regulation part of it. That's always kind of like, wow, yeah, California, they're getting smart on us. And that's not good for Nevada. I think we got to get smart on some of these regulations. But we leave our listeners with the number one thing. So if our business owners and would-be entrepreneurs are out there thinking of maybe jumping in the wine import-export business, what's the number one takeaway they should remember?
Well, if you're importing wine, the one thing you should remember is buy the wine that you want to drink yourself. Because if all else fails, you have something to drown your sorrows in.
Well played.
Joking aside, it does take a little bit of a planning. That's the number one thing is planning.
Right.
You don't want to just go out there and try to buy a wine for cheap and try to sell it for 50% more, because that's eventually the truth will catch up with you. So, buy wines that you think are honest and are speaking to you. Then it's not a hard thing to talk about it. It's not a hard thing to pitch it to someone else because you believe in it.
Well, you believe it, yeah, and it's good. Right.
So, and travel, go and meet those winemakers and see, and appreciate their challenges. And almost all the winemakers I work with are my friends, and they're my friends now.
Right.
Of course, my business associates, but be honest with yourself as to what you're getting into, and buy the wines that you like.
Right, right. Well, and that's where I'd probably say my number one takeaway, which is not too dissimilar from yours, Shaji, is you got to have a very real practical plan for cash flow. A lot of times people don't appreciate the cost of capital while it's sitting there in the warehouse, and you get the bill every month for wine that's still sitting there, right? So, and they don't build in margin. They're like, hey, if I just make a little bit, I'll make all this money. Well, they forget the carrying costs. And the other thing is getting shop worn. Again, the forklift runs into pallets of stuff. That just happens. And so when that happens, or if the box is damaged, even though the wine inside's fine, people are going to be a little bit more hesitant to buy that case of wine. So it's called shop wear, and just to know how that's going to impact what you can sell that wine for. So I'd say just planning, a very real practical expectation on planning. And you can get that kind of data. The Small Business Development Center is a great place to be able to kind of say, okay, how many times, what are my sales, and then take that by number of days, how much sales a day, then you'll tell you how you're going to turn your inventory. So, of course, Dick Barthlet can help you there. Of course, we can help you too, 775-786-4900, that free one-hour consultation. We're here to help. It's Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KUH.